time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 675 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's a special episode, so I'm talking with Tom Snegoski, who is the scripter for the upcoming Herculoid series from Dynamite Entertainment. Tom and I talk about the animated series that started it all, as well as take a deep dive into the various characters and what made this show a favorite for fans even decades later. Here's how the comic is described. The legendary planet of Amzot sits in the farthest reaches of deepest, darkest space. It's a planet of extreme riches, but those who seek it out are routinely struck by untold disaster and terrible fates. Anyone who manages to survive to tell the tale speaks of horrific, imposing guardian monsters that protect it. Yet raiders and explorers continue coming, only to meet the Herculoids again and again. Set to debut in February 2025, the book's creators invite fans to adventure with the Herculoids as they protect their home, and even they will learn bigger secrets about their planet. Tom also discusses the art from collaborator Craig Russo, which many fans are also already looking forward to enjoying. Don't wait, be sure to let your local comic shop know you want this book as soon as you finish listening to this fun interview. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Tom has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Somewhere out in space live the Herculoids. Zok, the laser ray dragon. Igu, the giant rock ape. Tundro, the tremendous. Gloop and Bleep, the formless, fearless wonders. With Xandor, their leader. And his wife Tara and son Dorno. They team up to protect their planet from sinister invaders. All strong, all brave, all heroes. They're the Herculoids.
All strong, all brave, all heroes. They're the Herculoids. And of all things, they're coming to comics through Dynamite Entertainment. And I'm pleased to be able to talk with the writer of said comic, which is coming in February. And that's Tom Snegoski. How you doing, Tom?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. Oh, gosh, I don't know where to begin. There's so much about this. Well, maybe I'll talk a little bit about personal so people can understand. The Herculoids actually came out initially on CBS Saturday mornings in 1967. I was a kid at that time, and I was glued to the television because I loved superheroes at that time. And as I mentioned to you, it started off with Frankenstein Jr. and the Impossibles at 9. 9:30 was the Herculoids. 10 was Shazam, 10:30 was Space Ghost, 11 was Moby Dick and the Mighty Mitro, and I think Superman and Aquaman came on after that, which is a whole nother ball of wax. But I bought a reel-to-reel recorder because I wanted to tape the music and the sounds and stuff from it because I loved it so much. And I just loved it. So talk about how you got it. Were you the same like me? Did you get into it through watching it on Saturday morning?
There, I can honestly remember sitting in front of the television set. I was five and just being totally like mesmerized by the various characters in that particular show. And honest to God, they like almost branded themselves into my brain. I never forgot them. As the years went on, the show, of course, went away. But as I got involved in comics, even in my earliest days of comic book writing, and I would ask publishers, who has the rights to the Herculoids? Who has the Herculoid? And then everybody would like look at me like, I don't know. I don't care. I don't know. but it was always something. And what's interesting too is that I always found that other creators, be it comic artists, be it other comic writers, had that same fascination with those characters. You'd bring it up and their eyes would get huge and they'd say, oh yeah, they're so cool. I wish somebody would do something with them. And I mean, this is always something that like was always in the back of my brain that I would love to write these characters someday. And look at that. Dreams do come true.
How about that? Because, you know, there were comics that came out around the time that they were out.
Right.
And right. I had I got every one of those. I used to go to a local store that sold comics and candy. And we used to think it was like heaven. You know, you run out and get the comics and you could run down and buy candy so you could eat while you were reading it. Oh, gosh, I love that. So, but the Herculoids to me always stood out because they were very science fiction and they were very unlike, even though I was a big superhero fan, I liked things that were outside the norm. And that's where these guys came in.
Well, I think one of the coolest thing about them was the look. There was such a unique look to the design of these characters. And we owe that to comic book artist Alex Toth.
Oh yeah,
designed Space Ghost, and he designed Herculoids and Birdman and all that stuff. But his designs just like stand out. Like they're exactly who is responsible when you see his character designs. They're amazing. I love them.
And the visuals on the screen. Of course, this is back in the day when people didn't have 20, 30 foot screens. Mm-hmm. We had these little tiny screens we were looking at, and they just stood out. I remember sitting there and going, you know, the first one, my favorite of the Herculoids was always Zoc.
Okay. Because
he was the cleanup guy. Whenever, you know, Tundra would come in and explode things up, and Igu would punch things, and then at the very end, in would come Zoc, and he would laser everything into submission, and then that was it. So I always liked when Zoc came in; that meant things were about to end.
Zoc comes across to me even now as probably the more powerful of all the Herculoids.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely something special about Zoc. Not that they're not all special in their own unique way, but there's something almost scary about Zoc's potential.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He could, like I said, he was cleanup. He just blew and everything honestly, to smithereens.
Oh, you want a little something. I'm making Zoc a she.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
For some reason when I started to plot the stories, I was plotting that character as a female. And I wrote to my editor and I'm like, you know, would you think Warner Brothers would have a problem if I made Zoc a female? And he was like, did they ever mention if it was a boy or a girl before? And I'm like, I don't think they ever did.
Mm-mm.
And he was like, yeah, you can do that. Sure. That's not going to cause any problems.
Now, see, what's interesting, too, is every one of the Herculoids had their own distinct growl or thing that they did. Zox was always higher pitched than all the others.
Yep.
I noticed that. It was, and Igu was, you know, this deeper thing. And Tundra was that way, too. And so that makes perfect sense. I never thought of that. That is so interesting.
Yeah, and it plays into one particular story that I'm doing. So that actually kind of was like, oh, this is perfect.
Oh, wow. Now, see, I was thinking the other day about this whole business, and I thought how far ahead of its time Herculoids was. You know, we talk about diversity and stuff now. And you talk about a diverse group, the Herculoids were diverse. You know, Zoc is a dragon. Igu is an ape. Tundra was like a rhinoceros, and Gloop and Gleep are they call them the formless, fearless wonders. And I loved all those. The whole thing about them was they were so different from each other, and yet they worked together really well. And I kept thinking, boy, this was the 60s was the era of Star Trek, which diversity started.
That's true. Yeah.
So I just wonder if the Herculoids weren't like decades ahead of their time by being this, such a diverse group of even, of course, animals, they don't care. They just work together. They don't worry about things like that.
And actually I always felt that they were much smarter than just animals. I have a much higher opinion of their intelligence. And I kind of show that off a little bit in the comic as well.
Oh, wow. That's going to be kind of fun. Do you have a favorite? Zoc is my favorite. Which one do you like the best?
Oh, Ego is my favorite.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Ego. The design on Ego just always stuck out to me. Yeah, I was totally captivated by a rock ape. Who wouldn't be excited by a rock ape when they were five? You know, that's like, yeah, that just was permanent for me, that one.
I always liked his the noise he made. Very deep sounding, which is I love that thing. You know, Tundro I thought was the least of the bunch, but even though he was very strong, he could shoot little exploding rocks, which I never understood where they came from out of his.
Well, you know what? I might if I get my way, I'm going to explain where those come from too.
Oh, good. See, these are, I always want to know where things came from and how they got to be the way that they do.
That's
I mentioned to you before we started to record about the fact that I want to know where these things came from. Are there other laser ray dragons around? Are there other rock apes? Are there, you know, other tundra type things?
Yep.
See, I want to know where they all came from. How did the Herculoids actually come together? That kind of thing. I always want to know those things, like Xandor and Tara and Dorno, the humans of the bunch. Did they bring them together? Did something happen?
We'll just have to read by the first 12 issues to possibly find out.
I want to know. Now, of course, that leads me to another question, very Star Trek. I mean, is this going to be considered canon?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I mean, as far as the comics go, I would imagine it's canon.
Okay.
I mean, I would like it to be considered canon, but I guess if another licensor picked up the book and wanted to start it over again, I guess they would do their thing too, you know? So I don't know.
See, the thing I want to see is I want to see more animated cartoons of the Herculoids. You know, we've seen two different series. The original, the first Herculoids was on CBS 67 to 69.
Right.
And about 10 years later, NBC gathered together a whole bunch of space stars, as they called them.
Yes.
And they had Space Ghost, the Herculoids, Teen Force, Astro and the Space Mutts. And then they have like a finale segment where they would team up certain groups of them. I could not stand Astro and the Space Mutts. And I could not stand. If that ever came on, I would change the channel for a few minutes and not watch it. But of course, that's where we got to see Space Ghost team up with Herculoids. Not only that, was in the second season of Space Ghost. Space Ghost ran into the Herculoids.
Yeah. And the Dynamite is also doing a fantastic Space Ghost book.
Oh, yeah.
And David Pipos and I have talked about possibly doing a crossover for Dynamite.
That'd be so much fun.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, we'll see what Dynamite says, but both of us have said we're in. If Dynamite says they want it, then we're going to do it.
Well, Space Ghost, the comic that David is doing, is right up my alley because I like to know how things came to be. He's showing how the whole bunch of them all came together, and worked together, and I love that. I love that he does that. Now, I don't know. Did you ever read the Future Quest series that DC did?
That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I
loved all that because, Jeff Parker, who's, interestingly enough, he's writing the Santa Claus thing for DC right now that they've done. He does that series every Christmas, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, he does it with Santa Claus and Batman, right?
Yeah, he does that. So he's always been a great writer and stuff like that. And I wish that had survived longer because, you know, they changed some of the costumes. Birdman's costume got changed in that, and some of the other stuff got changed around. But to me, I loved seeing the characters because I hadn't seen those characters in a while. And I bought them like crazy, and I interviewed Jeff for this podcast back when it was coming out. And I was like, gosh, I wish they'd do more of those. But I guess it's, you know, there's not that many of us who are that excited about that era of TV animation. But It only lasted like a year or two, but boy, did I love it.
Yeah, it was like one big, wasn't it like one big story with like little offshoots that came off of it? Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought that was like the first time that we actually saw actual attempts to do new stories with those characters, which I thought was a lot of fun.
I love now you've got me curious. Okay, Zok is female and Igu's male?
Igu's male.
Okay, Tundra?
Tundra's male also. Gloop and Gleep are whatever they want to be. and then, of course, Xander, Tara, and Dorna are humanoid.
Okay, yeah. See, I'm going to be so fascinated to see what you – because to me, there is like this untapped story going on around them, and I'm just going like –
oh, yeah.
Can you imagine all the wonderful things that you can do? And I just, I'm in a way, I'm a little jealous because, man, you're going to get to explore all this stuff.
Yep.
And make it, you know, and bring it up. And I hope it's a huge success. See, I keep thinking, and as I said, I would love to see a version of Space Stars come on some network where they had Hercules and Space Ghost. Never mind the Team Force and the Astromuts and all that stuff.
Well, maybe you'll get your Space Ghost Hercules crossover book. And
I'd love that.
Yeah, because like I said, David was all for it, and so am I. So,
I don't think David's old enough to have seen those when they were on originally.
No, he's definitely younger than we are. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he's gone back and like just digested all this stuff. So,
because it's only recently they put the Herculoids out on disc.
Yeah, they put it's been on DVD for a few years, and I think it recently came out on Blu-ray, like maybe like 2 years ago.
Because Space Ghost has been out for a long time.
Yeah, Space Ghost and Johnny Quest, I think, were the ones that they really, when it came out on DVD, it was the big push on those two. They had nice packaging and everything like that.
Yeah, it's just great. I actually spent some time. I get a little time every once in a while when I'm going to go back and check something out. And I watched Johnny Quest, the original series that when it was on from ABC. And then I watched, they had other ones that came after that. I think one of them was on NBC, if I'm not mistaken. And this is something that impacts the Hercules second cartoon, because the first cartoon, that era was like a golden era for animation. Oh, man, the stories they told, they had me on the edge of my chair every time it came on. And I just, and then when like a decade or two later when it came, not so much. I mean, I think what happened was the parent-teacher association, some of them got in the snit and said, this is too violent. We can't have this stuff. We've got to have things that are less, you know, that don't get our kids as involved. And so I just, you know, I watched the Johnny Quest later, and Herculoids are better.
The original Johnny Quest have that really nice kind of pulpy feel to them.
Oh. Fantastic.
And anything that they've done since then kind of almost tries to do that, but at the same time almost tries to tap into whatever's in popular pop culture stuff now, and it just didn't have the same flavor.
Yeah,
it didn't really work.
But there's even Dynamite's even putting out a Johnny Quest.
Yeah, and that's terrific too.
Oh gosh, I just got done reading the last issue of the first arc. Yeah. I was transfixed. I was like, wow, that was really interesting. They go to the future, go to our time, where they run into Johnny, who is has aged naturally over the time, and there he is. And I was really all these things are really wonderful. I want to shake somebody's hand at Dynamite, whoever's doing all this.
Yeah, you know what? That's definitely I'm so excited by the fact that they really seem to have put a lot of thought into how they wanted to do these books. Mm-hmm. They don't come across as kind of like, oh, that would be fun, let's just do it. It seems like there was definitely like a focus. Like they sat down and they're like, all right, if we're going to do this, how are we going to do it?
Yeah. And make it work.
This is how we're going to do it. Yeah. Cause that's what they did to me when Nick Barucci, who's the president of Dynamite, said that he wanted me to do the Hercules. The next thing that I had to do was, all right, what would your first year be about? Give us a rough idea as to what the first 12 issues of the comic would be. So I had to like sit down and go, all right, what do I want to do in the first year? How do I amuse myself because I'm getting to write these characters that I absolutely adore? Mm-hmm. How do I capture the interests of the people like me who used to sit in front of the TV set and watch these things in 1967? Mm-hmm. And also, how do I get new readers to come in? How do I get somebody who's really not all that familiar with these characters, but may say, hey, that big rock ape looks really cool. I want to see what that's all about. How do I pull them and keep them interested too?
See, there's been something of a change as far as like young boys and stuff. Cause when I was growing up, monsters were it. I mean, everybody wanted to be dinosaurs and all this kind of stuff. Yep. And now I don't see that quite so much. And so I'm always, maybe the Herculoids will help introduce kids back into the notion that, you know, just because something is bigger and different from us, maybe we can enjoy them just as much as, you know, human characters and stuff.
Oh yeah, that was always monsters were my best friends growing up. It was all about them. I didn't really care all that much about the human characters. I like the monster characters.
But you mentioned the humans. I got to mention that the voiceover at the beginning of the initial show, and the voice of Xandor was Race Bannon from Johnny Quest.
Okay. That seems about right to me. Yeah.
Same guy. And I would always be watching and I was going, oh, you know, because he did a whole bunch of other shows as well. And I think he was like a
Hanna-Barbera guy. I think he did a Hanna-Barbera stuff.
He did all kinds of amazing things. Now, as I remember, I mentioned I would record stuff. I also loved the music of those original episodes. Mm. They would start out with drums beating, blah, 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 and all of a sudden, and things would happen, and the music was just like, wow. And that's one another reason I recorded it, because I loved the music in it so much. And that wasn't the same in the Space Stars. By then, the notion was that the music shouldn't be too exciting, as I heard somebody say it one time.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it became a much more of a in the background, just sort of mulling background noise.
Yeah, it's there, but not noticeable.
Yeah. And I talked one time with a guy who was putting together music from DC, all the DC stuff. And I said to him, I said, you know what you really should do is you should go back and get the Hanna-Barbera stuff and put all that music out. I'd buy that in a heartbeat because I loved all that initial music and stuff like that, because it was just
the Johnny Quest music was fantastic.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's why I sat down and watched the whole thing again. And I remember it made me feel like a kid again, because I'm sitting watching and they're doing this amazing stuff. And as a kid, I didn't care about the relationship between Race and all this stuff. He was hired to be a teacher, basically, and stuff.
Yeah, he was the nanny.
So all this other stuff that later on got put in, I was like, nah, go away with all that stuff. I don't care about all that. But there's a lot of people who always look at sidekicks and superheroes. There's a relationship there. And I always go, I don't see that. I don't know where you're getting that from, but I don't see it. So to me, the fact there was a family involved, I like that. Xandor and Tara. See, I'd like to know, how did this all get set up? Was Xandor and his wife there? And that's where, and Dorno obviously came from out of their relationship, but were they living on there? And of course, this I mentioned before we started recording too, Amzot was renamed Quasar, and we were laughing about the fact that the producers have to go in there and have to make something their own, and they probably changed Amzot to Quasar just out of that. But
in the first issue, I kind of touch on that. So
yeah,
people will go, oh, all right, that makes sense.
Because, you know, another thing they did too, is, well, I mentioned Space Ghost, they changed his Phantom Cruiser. It became, the first one was sort of sleek, graceful kind of Phantom Cruiser. And the second one looked like it came out of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, and that was probably the reason why.
So I remember looking at it going, no, I don't think that's the right ship. Where'd the real ship go?
Yeah, the sleek one was awesome.
Oh, I love that. And that's the one he's using in the comic right now.
Yeah, in the comic. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So all this stuff to me, all this is integrated in there. I want to know more. I want to understand, you know, what happened to these characters, I heard somewhere where you're going to delve into why the invaders are always coming to their planet.
Yep.
Which I would like to know that. I the only thing I can figure is there's resources on the planet that they're
working. That's one of the reasons. Yeah.
So that kind of stuff. See, all these things, I want to know more. This tickled my imagination so thoroughly when I was a kid that 30, 40 years later, I'm still, man, what happened with this? And why was this way? And what happened with this? So I want to see all this stuff. I do you know, are they thinking about bringing other Hanna-Barbera stuff into Dynamite?
I believe that's the plan. I believe that if they're thinking of doing more, I think they're very they like to try what they have first and see that response and then go the next level, because there's actually a couple of characters that I would love to get my hands on those too. Okay. I would love to get my hands on Frankenstein Jr. and I would love to get my hands on the Mighty Mitor.
Oh, yes. The only thing about the Mighty Mitor that drove me nuts was Little Rock.
Yeah.
Little Rock was kind of like Batmite was on the Batman shows. He was there to stop things from happening too quickly.
I'd have to work on that. I'd have to, like...
See, I'd like to see Little Rock as an adolescent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That'd be something different. Yeah,
that would be fun to do. I loved Mitor. Mitor was my favorite, but every time Little Rock appeared on the screen, I would go, oh, not this again. Oh, I can't stand Little Rock. But the thing about I love Mitor. How Mitor got to be that way, I'd love to find out.
Yeah, and again, that's like the thing that makes me immediately excited about potentially doing something with that character is that my gears immediately start to turn. They're like, all right, what kind of stories could I tell here? This is as a caveman superhero. How cool is that? That's just like perfect.
Well, you know, I mentioned the second season of Space Ghost, where they only did, I think it was 6 or 8 episodes. Okay. And what they did was every episode, Space Ghost went and visited another CBS cartoon. He went and saw Suzanne at one point. He saw Mitor at one point.
Yeah.
He saw Moby Dick and his two kid companions and stuff like that. And so I wouldn't mind another one of those kind of stories, only this time with the Herculoids, where they run into all these other characters.
Yeah. Oh, I would do that in a heartbeat too. But I mean, right now, I want to establish the Herculoids as their own thing. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing that I'm thinking of in regard to that would be my second 12 issues and a crossover with David with Space Ghost. Those are the things that I'm mulling right now.
So does this mean that the first story arc is going to be 12 issues?
First story arc, yeah. Well, how I'm doing it is I'm like doing like little like one and dones, like little one like individual stories, but there's a theme that runs through all of them. Mm-hmm. And as you reach as you get closer and closer to the 12th issue, the theme has become the major plot, and that kind of propels you to the end of the first arc.
Okay.
In the year.
I imagine knowing you probably already have a good idea of what you want to do in the second arc.
I don't want to get myself too excited. I don't want to get myself disappointed if they say, yeah, well, no, we're only going to do a year. I don't want to get myself like upset if I don't get a second year, but there are germs of ideas percolating in my head.
But it sounds like they're pretty committed to doing a year.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, yeah. Unless it just completely bombs,
which I doubt.
I hope to God not. I mean, no. I'm putting my all into the scripting, and Craig Russo on the art is just fantastic. He's doing such a great job.
Yeah, I've seen bits of illustrations of some of the stuff that, and I have to say, boy, it I hear the music playing in the background. Yep.
He's done, and this is this I was saying this to somebody else I did an interview with recently, what Craig's done is he's managed to tap into the nostalgic aspect. You look at his artwork and you're immediately transported back to sitting in front of the television set and watching that show. But at the same time, there's a neat little modern spin to it as well. So he's done this great combo of new and nostalgic, and it's just wonderful. I mean, he's killing it. Every time I get pages from him, I'm dying. I'm like, oh, I want this one. I want this one. I want put this one aside for me. I want this one. I'm not going to have any money. I'll just be buying Craig's pages.
Well, now I got this brings up something else in my mind. Are we going to see, because they were forever having aliens and other things from outside the planet coming?
Yeah.
Are we going to see any of those come back with maybe a different take on? Because some of them are robots and some of them are monsters and some of them are all different.
Yeah, we are. We definitely like that. I just turned in the third script and we have the Mole Men, which were these subterranean creatures that were in I don't even know what episode it was, but they were in the episode. I was like, I want to use the Mole Men. I want to do something with them. That's really cool. And that also ties in with the main theme that runs through all the stories. I'm definitely tapping into other alien species and things that we've seen in the show.
So are you getting to bring all these stories you've thought of for years? You're bringing them into the comic now that you get a chance to tell the story.
Well, you know, what's funny. I always wanted to do it, but I was always cautious because I never knew what they were going to want. Mm-hmm. So I never wanted to invest myself too much into get an idea and have them say, nah, we don't want that. So it was always, I'd love to do it, but I would always hold back on the actual construction of the stories until this time. And they said, all right, what would you do in a year? Then I was basically given my marching papers to all right, go ahead, cut, sit down and actually plot out the first year of the series. And that was cool.
One thing that some people do with revivals that drives me up the wall screaming is they alter the characters, or they, like, let's say they take out Igu and they put somebody else in.
Some
other monster.
You couldn't do it. Yeah. I mean, with the Herculoids, you can't, no, they have to be the Herculoids. There's no reason to do the book if you can't do the characters that we know.
See, I always tell people that if you have to upset the apple cart, if you're going to bring in Spider-Man, you're going to give him other powers.
Yeah,
that tells me you shouldn't be writing Spider-Man.
Right.
Write some other book, because Spider-Man is Spider-Man.
The thing that fascinated me about the Herculoids was the fact that if you look at the episodes, from episode to episode, there's a certain amount of repetition to the kinds of stories that they told. You know, it's kind of like you got the hang of all right, the aliens come, they try to take over the planet, the Herculoids beat them, they go home. And there's a repetition. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to kind of expand on the characters. We need to know a little bit more about Xandor. We need to know a little bit more about Zok. Even though they are big giant monster type characters, I want to get into the heads. I want to add depth. I want people to say, oh, now I know something. You're not just a big laser dragon. You're something way cooler than that. And I know how you think. I know how you operate. I know why you do what you do now. And that got me all excited when I thought about doing, especially the individual stories that feature the creatures, the Herculoid creatures. I wanted to go the next step in terms of the storytelling of the show. Because again, like I said, and it's all perfectly awesome and cool, but there was a certain repetition to the episodes on Saturday morning. And I just wanted to take it to that next step. So you get that nostalgia, but at the same time, you're getting more from.
We only got like 7 minutes to tell the Herculoid story on the cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, I think they did a great job of what they had, yeah. But at the same time, I think they wanted to kind of like keep it. The show became like a nice warm jacket. You know, yeah. You knew what you were going to get every episode.
Mm-hmm. But it was fun.
Yeah. Oh, 100% fun. And I wanted to keep that fun, but I also wanted to give you a little bit more to kind of keep you coming back.
And adventure. That was the thing I really wanted. I wanted adventure. That's my favorite thing in comics, is to see adventure.
Yeah.
So you get to a situation. How in the world are you possibly going to get taken care of?
Yep.
See, I want to know how they got called the Herculoids.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure of that one yet. I'll be honest with you. I haven't really thought of that, but I'm sure it'll dawn on me as I'm as I'm scripting this thing. I'll be like, wait a minute, that's the reason.
Now, there's one other thing about, and I've listened to people, you know, kids from today doing examinations of older shows, and they talk about the Herculoids, and the one thing they always talk about is that the Herculoids didn't communicate with each other. And I was like, aren't you watching the episode?
No. Oh my God, they most certainly are communicating with each other. The humans understand exactly what all these creatures are saying.
Yes. See, that was the thing. I thought, man, you need to go back and rewatch that because, you know, they're saying different kinds of things. You know, Igu gets hurt and he goes, oh, kind of, you know. And there's all these things going on. And I'm like, pay attention to what they're saying. And this, I think, is great credit to whoever did the sound of the Herculoids, was that they did different sounds relating to what was going on around them.
Yes.
And this is what they, and even like you said, Xandor and Terra and Dorno could tell what the Herculoids were telling them. And I'm like, what the heck? I said, you guys didn't watch this show. Sometimes I think they just kind of have it on in the background. I think about that. And they don't really watch it. Because I'm sitting going, I love the sounds.
Yep.
Even the sounds of them talking to each other.
Yep.
Was great. Are you going to delve into that at all?
Other than the fact that they the creatures communicate with each other and stuff. Mm-hmm. They understand each other as well as the humans understand what they're saying. I mean, mm-hmm. the reason for a lot of this stuff is in my explanation. It is kind of coming. Yeah, yeah.
See, I'd love to know all that because, see, the thing I always – because basically when the Herculoids come on, we're dropped into the middle of a situation. Mm-hmm. We don't understand how they got there. We don't understand what's going to happen after. But the thing of it is it's like there used to be these little kids' books that were for adolescents and stuff. And I always noticed that this was what those little kids' books were. They dropped us in a situation that was fully developed. And then when that situation we were encountering ended, the book was over.
Yep.
And that's the way these episodes ran.
Yeah.
It was basically. Definitely. We were experiencing this adventure, and when this adventure is over, then we're they go on with their lives and stuff like that. So, oh gosh, I just see the thing to me is I'm happy to hear that there's not going to be a whole so it, like when they take the Fantastic Four and they take the Thing out and they put the She-Hulk in.
Oh, that's
I'm
crazy.
Going. I'm no. like that's not the Fantastic Four anymore.
No.
So for me, with the Herculoids, these are the Herculoids. Let's deal with them. There is so much to be able to explore with these characters and this situation. We don't need to alter it any. Let's
not
explore with what we got.
I think it's incredibly fertile ground. I mean, there's tons of stories that you could still tell with these characters. Definitely.
If you got your druthers, how many issues of the Herculoids would you get to score?
Oh, my God. As many as they want. I mean, honestly, if they said to me, Tom, this thing is selling great, just keep plotting, I would sit down on a weekend with my notepad and I would just start scribbling notes and just go from there. Actually, I'd probably sit down and watch the show again too, because that kind of stimulates you, because you kind of forget things. It's, you know, you're like, oh, wait a minute, that little throwaway sentence could be its own story. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, God. See, I hope you get your wish, because I would love to buy them and read them, because, gosh, I'm so excited about this book. It's one of the books of this year that I'm the most excited to get to. And like I already wrote to, like I said, the lady who runs the store, she knows I'm going to be there with bated breath the day that this comes out. And I'm going to be, all right, where is it? I need to have the Herculoids. Where is this? If I can, I'm going to try to find anybody's got any of the sound of the music anywhere. I'm going to play it in the background when I'm reading the.
There you go. That'll transport you back and get yourself a bowl of cereal too.
Well, as far as other stuff, as much as I would love for this to occupy your time, because I can't wait for it. Are there other things that you're working on that we should be aware of?
Oh, let me think. There's a couple of things that haven't been announced yet that I can't say anything about. One of the things that I'm super excited about is I wrote a novel with Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy, called Grim Death and Bill the Electrocuted Criminal. And it's this throwback to like the 1930 pulp stories, like Shadow and the Spider and Doc Savage. Mike wanted to do like a supernatural character, a novel like the old pulps. Mm-hmm. So he came to me with like this like very simple like a sentence. He said, "What would you do with this?" Mm-hmm. And I kind of created a universe and a cast and of characters, and that came out in I think 2017. It came out originally. Mm-hmm. And I recently got the rights back, and a new publisher named Bad Hand Books put out a new edition in October. So there's a new edition of Grim Death and Bill the Electrocuted Criminal, but that's going to lead into new Grim Death stories.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to finally get to do my Grim Death, my Doc Savage, like my Shadow. I'm going to get to tell more Grim Death stories.
Sounds like fun.
And I'm so excited about that. That's going to be great. So that's prose. That's novels. That's not comics.
Okay.
Though there may be a little comic thing that I can talk about later on.
Okay.
Involving Grim Death too.
Okay.
I can only talk about the novel right now.
Okay. Well, of course, the way for us to keep in touch with what you're up to, can we follow you on social media anywhere?
Yeah, you can find me. Just look up Thomas Nagoski on Facebook, and I'll pop up. That last name should. There aren't many of us.
Can you spell that for people? Because the internet is horrible when it comes to. If you spell something wrong, you're done.
Yeah, it's SNIEGOSKI, and then Thomas, and it should pop right up.
Okay.
And you can find you type that last name in and I'll pop up.
Very likely. Now what about a brand new year? What about conventions? Are you planning to go to any conventions in 2025?
The only convention I know 100% that I'm going to right now is San Diego. I go to San Diego every year. I'll definitely be in San Diego. But my plans are San Diego, New York. I do the big shows.
Mm-hmm.
Boston, because I live in Massachusetts, so I'll do some Boston stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Free Comic Book Day I do in New Hampshire. There's a fantastic store called Jetpack Comics in New Hampshire. I do their Free Comic Book Day thing every year.
Mm.
I'm doing a lot. I'm doing some really cool work with my writing partner, Janine Atchison is her name. And she's brand new to comics. And I'm teaching her the ropes of this crazy storytelling. We did a bunch of Vampirella stuff together. We did Vampirella Dark Reflections. It was the last series that we did also for Dynamite. I believe the collection of that is coming out probably within the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that, and oh man, yeah, I'm busy. I'm keeping off the streets.
Well, good. Keep doing the Herculoids is all I can ask for, because I somebody who understands it like you do, that always gives me a lot of courage. See, I gotta talk to David and find out how he found out about Space Ghost, because he writes it like he's seen the whole show for all this time.
You know what though? He might, knowing David, and I don't know him well, but I've talked with him a couple of times. I bet he just thought the character looked really cool and just started watching it, and then found out that Dynamite was going to be doing it and jumped on that. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Because he did Marvel when they had the rights to Conan. He was writing Conan for a while.
Well, he did Savage Avengers, which had Conan in it.
Right. And then the rights went over to Titan, and then Jim Zub, who's been doing it over there, is doing Conan over there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I started reading his stuff before he got into Marvel. He's done some stuff that just amazed me. He did like a Calvin and Hobbes-ish book that was an indie type book. And
I remember that book.
The second season he did of that, he did something that I was shocked that he did it. I won't spoil it because I want people to read it.
It's funny because I've always noticed that book. I didn't know that was him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I should see if I can find those.
Oh, gosh.
His work.
Look at the second series, season, and let's say in Britain, the series, second series. He does something that he could do with Calvin and Hobbes, but Bill Watterson never did anything like that. Right. I was shocked. My jaw hit the floor when I saw that's when I started to think I got to read more that this guy does because
he's doing some really, I like his work. He's a nice guy too, so that helps enormously as well.
He's thoughtful about the stuff which I like. And then you too. You see, the great thing is you understand the characters and you know what makes them sparkle, and that kind of thing is the thing I'm dying to read in the comics. So, when this comes out, you said middle of February is when this is going
to
come out.
February 19th is the official release date, so let's hope they stick to it. I mean, it's done. I've seen the finished book and everything, so hopefully it'll hit stores then.
Okay, so the thing to do right now is to get to your local comic shop and tell them you want the Herculoids coming out from Dynamite Entertainment.
Yes.
And be sure to get in there, and if you want to if you know any kids or anybody who's into monsters, this is a book to give to them. I think they're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. It's you could consider it an all-ages book for sure. I mean, it's not a little – I didn't write it for like a little kid's book, but I think everybody could enjoy it. There's nothing offensive about it or anything.
I'm so excited about this book. I cannot wait to see it. This is going to be one of my favorites.
It was a little intimidating. Because I was so excited about these characters for so long, to actually have somebody say to you, okay, you're doing it, was kind of like, you kind of almost like wanted to run screaming because suddenly you're faced with, all right, put up a shut up. You know, it's like, oh man. And I was cool. I sat down, deep breaths.
Well, the fun's going to be when people actually start to read them.
I know. I'm a little terrified because, again, it's like, you know, there's part of you that's so proud of what you did, but then there's another half of you that's saying, "Oh, but what if they don't like it?" I mean, that's I've been doing this long enough that's just part of the game, you know.
Yeah, I've still got to wrap my mind around the fact that Zoc is a female.
Where do you see the Zoc issue though? Then it'll be like, oh, I see what he's doing. You'll get it.
It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait, Tom. It's good stuff. And all I can say is this: I hope it's so successful you get to tell every Herculoid story you ever wanted to tell. That's all.
There's an awful lot of them. So, you know, I totally agree with that. I would love to keep doing it.
Let's get them all. Put them all out there. That's all I want to see. So
definitely.
Congrats on doing it. I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic book. I cannot wait to get it in my hands. And Tom, much success in 2025 and just keep doing the great stuff.
And I want to know what you think.
Well, I'll let you know. Don't worry.
Yeah, you definitely. I mean, when somebody is as big a fan or somebody who sounds like a biggest fan as you, you are the person that I want to get feedback from. I want to hear what you think.
Can I tell you a quick story before I let you go? I'm a big Batman fan.
Oh,
and
okay.
I heard that Scott Snyder was going to start taking – this was back – this way back when the New 52 was starting. Mm-hmm. And he was going to do it, and I wanted to interview him for the podcast. So I talked with him and stuff like that. I did all my research and stuff like that. And I was just as excited about that as I was and I am with the Herculoids. And I got done interviewing him, and he said, you know what? He says, you're so into the character and stuff. I want to know what you think about the books and the stories that I tell with Batman. I said, really? He said, yeah, I'll give you my email address. You can't give it to anybody else. But every time an issue comes out that I've written, you write me and tell me what you thought of it. And I thought, okay. And so what I started doing was, and I told him, I said, you don't have to respond. You're busy creating. That's what your job. My job is to tell you what I thought of it. And so every time a new Batman issue would come out, I would send him an email.
Okay.
And tell him what I thought. And I saw him in Baltimore a year or two later. And he saw me coming. He says, there you are. I said, you know, I'm having real trouble sending you those emails. I've run out of words to describe it, like fantastic and wonderful and excellent and stuff. And he says, you know, he says, I'm not having trouble reading your emails. He goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, because yeah,
his run on Batman was great. I loved his run.
Well, now he's got absolute Batman going.
Yeah. Which is really fun. I wasn't sure. I approached that kind of like, what is this? I'm not sure if I like this, but there was an energy to it that was just really cool.
It's great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe someday you'll do an absolute Herculoids.
Oh my God. You know what? You don't have to do an absolute Herculoids. Just do damn Herculoids. They're cool enough. You don't have to absolute them. Cool.
See, that's what I like to hear. I want to hear that because the Herculoids are terrific just as they are.
Yeah, so. They were so ripe to do more with that I'm beside myself that I'm going to get the chance to do it.
Well, February can't get here fast enough for me because I want to be able to read those books. So it's going to be great fun. So, Tom, just keep it up. I can't wait to read your stuff. It's going to be wonderful.
Thank you. And please keep in touch with me and let me know what you think.
Will do.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/major spoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/major spoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.